I'm John Kroll. Today, as part of our ongoing partnership with Side Effects Public Media, we're going to continue our community conversation about important health issues. We're going to talk about the distressingly high incidence of cancer among firefighters and what can be done about it. My guests are Tom Hanafy, Firefighters Union of Indiana President, Kevin Crawley, Health and Safety Chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is nolimits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Today, as part of our ongoing partnership with Side Effects Public Media, we're going to continue our community conversation about important health issues. We're going to talk about the high rates of cancer, the risk of cancer among firefighters, and what is being done about it, what can be done about it. If you want to join this important conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Tom Hanafy. He is with the Firefighters Union of Indiana. He's the president. Kevin Crawley, who is the Health and Safety Chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. I want to dive into this subject, but before we get into that, I would like to offer a reminder to our listeners that we now are in the midst of our fall radio membership drive and are asking you to financially support the trusted news and compelling stories you hear on 90.1 WFYI every day, including this program, No Limits. We're talking less so you can listen more, and in the case of this program, No Limits, so you can talk more. We welcome your input and appreciate your support. Have you donated yet? You can go to wfyi.org/give and take care of that now, or you can call 1-800-233-0020. Please do so, and thank you for listening. So, we probably ought to talk first, set some frameworks. How large a problem is this? I'll start with Kevin on that one.
All right. Right now, cancer is the cause, 61% of career firefighter line of duty deaths since 2002 were caused by cancer. To contrast that, heart disease is only attributed to about 18% of line of duty deaths. So it's become the leading line of duty death cause for firefighters over the past two decades.
And we probably ought to define, even though it seems somewhat self-evident, what we mean by line of duty deaths.
Okay. The cause of injury, illness, led to the line of duty death, led to the death of the individual.
Somebody who was working. And has it always been this way, or is it a relatively recent development, Tom?
It's becoming more evident. Now, is that because of the science, or is that because that we're discovering these things? People historically died younger. And as we live longer, it becomes evident these cancers crop up. So that's part of it. And we didn't talk about it. When I came on the fire department in 1980, we didn't talk about these things at all. It was just assumed that you got old and moved on. Now, so we're measuring. So one is better measurements. Mm-hmm. But the room we're sitting in, everything here, no natural fibers or materials are used in this. I shouldn't say none, but everything has when it burns, it has toxins. It has some kind of oil-based product that created it.
Plastics. Synthetics.
Synthetics. Thank you, Hank. And the fires are burning different. When I came on in 1980, the smoke is different than it is today. That the fires we see today, it's more toxic, and you can feel it. A strange word. It's more. Mm-hmm. More oily. It's a little, you feel it, it's more oily. You can feel it versus the fires we had back in the day where natural fibers were burnt.
How did we come to discover that this was a growing problem, Hank? Was it something that the firefighters themselves thought, whoa, you know, more of us are getting sick than it seemed like it used to happen?
Yeah, we started talking about it. We also started doing a wellness program for Indianapolis and all the fire departments in Marion County. We do a wellness screening that we do yearly physicals, and we're starting to pick up those. So that's how we're starting to see the data that we're actually getting firefighters at a higher rate diagnosed with cancer than the general public. So by doing the annual screenings, we're starting to notice it. And then the firefighters are also starting to report it, talk about it at the firehouses, and we're talking about it a lot more.
Kevin.
To dovetail onto that, those screenings, we get the results back, and we started noticing some trends. I mean, 10 years ago, we were seeing maybe less than 10 people in the department per year that were reporting a cancer diagnosis. In 2015, which was our highest year, we had 23 people. That number continues to climb.
How large a department is that?
Indianapolis Fire Department is 1,230 firefighters. So that's a pretty significant number. And we see that number continually grow each year, and we start seeing that trend, and it becomes alarming, and we start asking why.
So that's about 2% of the entire body, right, Tom?
Yes, and there are hot spots, which we're referring to. There are stations that have more incidence of cancer. Now, is that by coincidence, you know, or not, in several stations in the city? There's also a department, one of the departments in the city, that has has had a substantial increase in firefighters with cancers. They had up to 16% of the active firefighters had experienced a cancer. That, think about that. That's a young population. Mm-hmm. Generally, these people, the general population, is much younger than 60 years old, and that's very, very troubling when we come across those numbers.
So. What we've established, and we probably is there a consensus here that some of it is because of the way buildings are built and the rooms these days that you're encountering it, part of it is the work, that when you encounter a fire now, there are simply more toxins.
The fires, like President Hamby was talking about back in the day, the good old days, as he would call them, a lot of the building materials was wood, cotton, natural occurring materials. Now everything is plastic, synthetic, and the chemicals being put off the byproducts of the combustion and the fires, that chemical has changed the chemicals you're exposed to in those fires have changed drastically into now it's more man-made products, a lot more carcinogens. So that's been the more, I don't know what.
They refer to it as a toxic soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's different. You can feel the difference.
So, you know, to put this in, I'm going to ask you guys to paint kind of a word picture. Firefighting has always been dangerous work. I mean, you know, the cliche is that you guys, you know, run toward the things that everybody else is running away from. And you're running into a place not only where there's extreme heat, but dangers of collapse of structures and all kinds of things that can be deadly. Just negotiating that's dangerous enough, but it sounds like there's a time bomb there, too, that could be waiting for you on the back end.
I think Tom has a good saying, one of your job's going to kill you quick or it's going to kill you slow.
I mean, you look like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, when you think about cancer, you know, if we were talking about flu before this, that it takes about 3 days for that to incubate. When we're talking about cancer, we're talking about 10, 15, and 20 years for that to manifest in someone. So the damage that they're doing today out on a fire probably isn't going to become apparent or take effect for quite a while.
If you are just joining us, as part of our ongoing partnership with Side Effects Public Media, we're continuing our community conversation about important health issues. We're talking this time about the high rates of cancer among firefighters and what can be done about it. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI.
John,
go ahead, Tom.
A good example of the exposures, the changing exposures. 20 years ago, we had a fire at a warehouse building. And it was a bank warehouse building where they kept records. And this, in the records, the boxes, you know, everything was paper back then. Mm-hmm. And in these records, they were treated with a chemical, a fire retardant chemical. Well, nobody knew what that chemical was. It just said they were treated with a chemical. The firefighters that went in there, it was a toxic, strange smoke. And they went and they knocked it down. They fought the fire and saved the building. But afterwards, all the ones that were deep inside the fire had where their sweat glands were back in their armpits and after that fire, for days after that, their skin started peeling. And so we started asking questions. What happened? What was that chemical? And when substance burns, when these things burn at 2,000 degrees, nobody knows. The science isn't there to tell us that. But that's an anecdotal story. Several of those people, I can tell, one of them came on with me, and a wonderful woman, and she died of cancer early. She was, I think, about 55. And another individual that was deep in this fire and had I documented the exposures and what happened to him, and he's gone with cancer and we haven't measured all those things, but we couldn't even keep track at that time. We weren't there following the people back then, but these are anecdotal stories that I know from being around a long time. Chief Crawley and the Annapolis Fire Department's doing better and measuring those things, and maybe he can talk a little bit about that. But these are real, and these substances, when they burn, we don't know how dangerous they are. And the last thing, the other part, not last, never last for me, is it's not just what you inhale, but it's also, it absorbs through your skin.
Skin and goes through. And this raises, I think, a couple of the big questions that we've got to address here. The first one is, now that we know that this is a problem, what are we doing to protect the firefighters when they go into those situations now? I'm not giving anything away or any line of surprise line of questioning here. The second part that we're going to get to later is, what are we doing to care for the people who already have been exposed? Let's talk first about, okay, what are we doing now to try to protect people so that they aren't exposed to cancer? Is there a way to do that? I'll start with you, Kevin.
Yeah, there's a lot of studies that have gone on, especially over the last 5-10 years. Prior to that, there wasn't a lot of research available, and still today there's not. There was just a study done last year in Illinois with IFC, Illinois Fire Service Institute, and NIOSH, and so forth. They did a lot of research, and in that research, we originally thought that the jawline and places like that were where firefighters were becoming the most exposed, but that research, they found that it's actually our hands. And then from our hands, we touch all over. We take our coats off. We take our gloves off. We touch our face. We drink water. We eat. We do those things. So we have to find out how people are getting the cancer first, how they're being exposed. And then we have to work to reduce that risk. Some of that is we have several policies in place in the Indianapolis Fire Department. One of the most obvious is a self-contained breathing apparatus policy. We just changed that policy over the last couple of years to require it during all phases of firefighting. We've also increased where people have to wear their SCBA, whereas before we always thought that once we're outside, we're outside. Now we're wearing it any time that you're in contact with any smoke or byproducts of combustion. Obviously, our protective clothing and equipment that we wear protects us, but that stuff has to be cleaned. It also absorbs this stuff, and we take that back into the firehouse with us, and it off-gasses. So we've got to clean that turnout gear. People need to take showers after they're at a fire to get this stuff off of them. We have safety officers in place that help provide that oversight on the fire ground. And we've just recently started, about a year ago, we started a post-fire gross decon program where everybody is supposed to, after the fire, go through a gross decon to rinse off the bulk of those.
Explain what a gross decon is.
What we're doing is, you know, we come out of the fire, we've got the byproducts of combustion on us, we've got ash.
Does decon stand for
decontamination? Yes. Yeah. So what we're doing is every fire engine has a section of garden hose and some brushes, and we have everybody go through a line there and rinse them off and scrub them down. And it's just a gross decon to get the majority of the stuff off. And then from there, when we get back to the firehouse, the firefighters are supposed to take their turnout gear and submit it to be washed, to be laundered, and then they shower and so forth. So we're also – one of the things we're finding is in order to get this covered is documentation to show that linkage. And I know we'll get into that a little bit more later. Mm-hmm. We've created a mass exposure form so that we can start documenting and keeping track of when people are being exposed.
And we will pick that up after the break. We're talking about the distressingly high incidence of cancer among firefighters today on No Limits. My guests are Tom Hanafy, who's the president of the Firefighters Union of Indiana, Kevin Crawley, health and safety chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about the distressingly high rate of cancer among firefighters and what can be done about it. This is part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media and our ongoing community conversation about important health issues. My guests are Tom Hanafy. He is the president of the Firefighters Union of Indiana, Kevin Crawley. He is the health and safety chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So we were talking before we went to the break about some of the changes that have been put into place to try to protect these firefighters. And I'm going to throw this open to everybody. Is there any evidence yet that this is that these steps are being effective, or is it still too early to tell?
I think it's still too early. We talked about how long it takes to manifest. It's still too early to see, but we do have those programs in place, and we monitor to see that people are getting it done.
Not kind of like okay. To piggyback on what Chief Crawley stated was it's actually a cultural change. The mm-hmm. fire service is deep-rooted in culture and tradition. Tom can talk about the days they used to have smoke eaters where you didn't wear your air pack even going in. The culture had to change to actually start wearing your air pack going in. Now the culture is changing to wearing it throughout the whole operations of the fire from the beginning to the end to overhaul if you're outside. You also wanted to be the old salty guy that had a burnt up helmet and dirty gear. A lot of the guys didn't wash their gear because it showed you were out there doing work. You were getting the job done. And it was a symbol of pride on your job. We're now finding out that symbol of pride is actually hurting us. So trying to change that culture into you need to wash your gear, you need to clean it, you need to decon. It's not always good to have that dirty gear out there.
I think you've been cued.
In the past, if you, the other shift, somebody did some, you know, the firehouse rules, and if you want to get even with somebody, just clean their helmet off of all the soot and garbage. You clean it, and the individual will come up angry. Mm-hmm. Now, today, if you had a helmet like that, your coworkers would get on your case, and you'd probably get written up by Chief Crawley for wearing contaminated material.
Because you're exposing everybody.
You're exposed and themselves. And we were putting that stuff on their head. It was insane. Mm. But it was a matter of pride how much fire how deep you got into the fire. And it was a matter of pride. As I always like to say, the good old days were not always that great. They weren't always good. Sometimes we did some bonehead things. But we've changed the cultural change is what Hank is talking about. And I think that's important.
We've gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air. And again, if you want to join this conversation by phone, call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. This caller said, asked if you guys could talk a little bit more about how dangerous some of the chemicals are in our homes and how can we change that for everyone's safety. Who wants that one? Kevin's leaning in, so I guess he gets it.
Well, ironically, one of the most dangerous chemicals that we encounter are materials used for fireproofing. Those are some of the worst that when they actually do burn, that give off the worst chemical.
Yeah, and there's a movie or a video out there called Toxicoxy, and it discusses exactly the flame retardants and the chemicals it puts off, and I think all of them are carcinogens pretty much. So.
And the reality is whatever you have in your home, it puts off carcinogens. There aren't any natural fibers any longer. And it's with all of us. Even the beams you install are put together with glues. And when they burn, they're fine. They're great materials, and they allow a lot of flexibility in construction. But when they burn, it has a different reaction.
So let me pick up on, I think, the point all three of you are making, that this is, in addition to having to go through new technological steps, it's also a change of culture. It's a change of mindset on the part of the firefighters. How successful has that been on getting people to kind of buy into the program, especially since there are let's face it, a lot of the people who get drawn to this get drawn to it fairly young. And I'm not going to speak for anyone else, but when I was probably up until 25, I was reasonably certain I was bulletproof, and then time convinced me otherwise. But so, Hank, you raised it, I think, that question of the culture change. How effective have they been at changing that mindset?
I think we've been fairly effective. Last year, as the local, we put on a cancer summit, and we had doctors come in and speak about different parts of firefighter cancer, and whether it's the screening process, your risk factors. We had people from the Firefighter Cancer Support Network come in and have survivors. Past that, we've had active IFD firefighters visit the fire stations who are survivors of cancer. So when the firefighters are talking to them, they see themselves in these members that are out there talking about what they had to go through and the treatment and chemo and losing your hair and not being able to eat and weight loss. So I think through trying to personalize it with the firefighters, we've started to see that turn in culture. I know there's always pictures of fires out there, and now the pictures are showing people wearing their masks. They're showing people getting decon. So I think the buy-in is there now that they can actually kind of see it, and they see themselves in the older generation that had it and have gone through it. We've also started having a lot of younger firefighters come down with cancer. I just got back from Colorado from last week, where we put a young member's name on the wall who passed away from occupational cancer. So everybody on the fire department knew this gentleman. He was actually an Ironman triathlete. And he came down with it. So I think seeing it and personalizing it has got that to shift.
The thing that was most effective in combating our members dying of cancer is health care. And it's for the whole population. Mm-hmm. Regular checkups, good quality physicals, annual physicals. And when we implemented that back in the 1980s. But this is Indianapolis. We're all talking. Everybody here is on the Indianapolis Fire Department. Not every fire department does that around the state or around the country. And in fact, I dare say most of them do not follow the wellness fitness initiative that we put together with the fire chiefs and the firefighters association union. But early detection is the best way to take care of this problem. We're going to be exposed, and we don't know every way. But getting the physicals, getting quality physicals over the years, that's a turning point. And in Indianapolis, we're blessed, and Marion County in general, all the fire departments, but not every firefighter across the state of Indiana or the country are as fortunate as us.
Kevin, I noticed when I asked the question about how much the culture had changed, you gave a little bit of a shoulder shrug. How much has it changed? How much more needs to be done?
I'd be naive to say that every firefighter, when they go out the door, is doing 100% of what we're talking here. There does still have to be some sell in the culture. Part of that is a false sense of security that we have in some of the programs that are out there available. But what we are seeing that is a positive is, just to Tom's point earlier about the dirty gear and the badge mm-hmm. of honor, that sort of thing, we are seeing in our quartermaster, we're seeing more people wash their gear. I have company officers who are calling me and saying, hey, we have two sets of fire gear that's issued to us so that we have the ability to wash one, wear the other. But we're having company officers from firehouses that are calling and saying, hey, what do we do? We've had more than two fires this shift, and we can't wash both sets of gear and have none. I think that's an early indicator that people are starting to adopt. We are hearing on the radio more often that the incident command is creating that decon corridor so that our firefighters are doing that gross decontamination we talked about earlier. So we are seeing some of those things change, but it's not changing as quickly as we would hope. I think the biggest thing that we do is, to Hank's point, is the education. And I think one of the biggest sales of that education is when we brought those cancer survivors, those respected retirees, back into the firehouses and had them talk to the firefighters. We initially marketed that. I don't want to say market, but we sent those guys out and said, hey, can you just go out and give a 10-15 minute discussion? And those guys were coming back and saying, we couldn't get out of the firehouse. We were there for mm-hmm. an hour and a half, 2 hours talking to these guys. So those are very effective. And I think that shows that there is some buy-in going on.
Well, and it sounds like there's a sense of urgency. I know we were talking over the break, and you said actually even the numbers that you cited at the top of the program, if anything, kind of underplay the seriousness of the situation.
Yes, those were numbers that were new cases each year that I cited. We actually, as of the end of 2017, had 84 that we knew of, 84 firefighters that had cancer diagnosis within the department. It gets more to Tom's measure of about 16%. I know that's not mm-hmm. quite 16% of 1230, but that's still a pretty big number total. The types that we're seeing, mm-hmm. The cancer that we experience as firefighters, we don't just get one type of cancer. Mm-hmm. Several of our firefighters will have one type of cancer and then another type of cancer and another and so on. They'll have multiple types, different, not necessarily related to the spread of cancer that people normally see. Our most common in the Indianapolis Fire Department is prostate cancer. That's the majority, but we have a lot of different types of skin cancer and lung cancer, and certainly several others, but those are the most common that we see in Indianapolis.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the distressingly high incidence of cancer among firefighters today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Margaret has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just curious. I come from a commercial insurance background. I'm curious whether the workers' compensation carriers are covering the cancer for the firefighters.
Thanks for the call, Margaret. Actually, you were anticipating my next line of questioning there.
Okay.
But thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Okay, they're all pointing at each other right now. So I'll see if someone can get you an answer. Thanks much. So I think the first point went in Tom's direction, so we'll start there.
They are, first of all, there's a state code that in cancer is part of the pension code in the state of Indiana. The member has to demonstrate the connection between the cancer contracted based on an incident or a series of incidents through their career. It's very difficult to do that. So the insurance companies, the local insurance companies, are covering cancers, but it's covered, and it's at the expense of the generally the member. If I contracted cancer, I have my co-pays. I have mm-hmm. to and if you come down with a severe aggressive cancer like Hank just mentioned, a member,
well, it sounds like three or four of them
so the insurance companies, it's usually the burden is on the carrier, the members' health insurance that they're carrying. It's not generally considered a line of duty injury or illness.
And I can speak to that since that's what I manage pretty much every day. We have two things that the city needs in order to connect it to line of duty. Number one is we have to have an actual cause. We have, just like with any injury that you would turn into workers' comp, you have to have something that connects it to your line of duty. And that's difficult because if it takes several years to manifest, how do we go back and say that this specific fire is what caused my cancer? Tom gave the example of the records fire that he had earlier, and a lot of people had cancer from that. But the second piece of that is we have to show that they were non-smokers for 5 years. That's pretty easy. Usually most of our population aren't smokers anymore. But it's really difficult to get that linkage. One of the things I talked about before the last break is we have that mass exposure form so that now when people come back from fires and they're suspicious of the type of smoke or the type of things that they've encountered, that incident commander can put that report in and we have that documented. So down the road, we have the ability to go back and find those records. When somebody gets a cancer diagnosis, we can go back and hopefully find that linkage for them.
Yeah, but Hank, I'm thinking of the guy you just told me about, a young guy who was I was a triathlete myself.
I am not.
So I know the level of commitment and the level of fitness it takes to do that, to compete at that level at those distances. And you got to be pretty healthy, presumably, and it's not something where you can smoke or indulge in all sorts of unhealthy.
You're a healthy person if you're doing triathlon.
You have to. So when you see stuff like that happening, I would think that this would be a source of somewhere between concern and or resentment on the part of the firefighters that, you know, that they are incurring this. They're doing dangerous jobs, and yet no one's – it's very hard for them to get that acknowledged.
Yeah, so with that individual, his family did apply and did get the state benefit. He was able to prove that. Tom can talk about it a little bit more, dealing with the pension part of it, but on that case – he was awarded the benefit. As far as on the workers' comp, the two issues, the biggest issue is documentation. Like Tom said, documenting wasn't always the greatest from the fire department. The department does a really good job of documenting runs now, but the individuals may not, and the department holds those runs. So you have to go to the department, try to find out all the runs you have. The state fire marshal's office has created an online app where you can now document your own exposure. So any fire you go on, you can click on it and document it. So that way you have documentations of your run so that you can, down the road, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, when you are diagnosed, you have that documentation to say, I was on X number of fires. Here's where it was. Here's the chemicals that were involved in that. If you're on a warehouse fire, you can say, I was at a paint warehouse fire. Or if you're just on a residence fire, a lot of the older buildings and the old city limits have asbestos and have different carcinogens are in the house. So by documenting it and having control of your own documentation is a huge improvement, I think.
Tom, you were cute.
Hank mentioned the app, and this is it was developed by the State Fire Marshal's office, but not everybody's using it. We keep on pushing it out and getting people to use it. And it's one of those things you can, on the way back from the incident, you can log in on your phone, on your smartphone, and put it in there. We're encouraging that, and that will help us with a lot of this.
And if you are just joining us, we are talking about a pretty serious subject today, the alarmingly high incidence of cancer among firefighters and the difficulties in some, maybe even many cases, they have in getting proper care once they do have cancer. If you value conversations like this, I would remind you that here at WFYR, we are in the midst of our fall radio membership drive, and we're asking you to financially support the trusted news and compelling stories you hear on 90.1 WFYI every day. We're talking less so you can listen more, and in the case of this program, No Limits, we hope that you actually are talking more as well. We welcome your input and appreciate your support. Have you yet donated? If not, please consider doing so. You can go to wfyi.org/give and take care of that now, or you can call 1-800-233-0020. We're talking again about the high incidence of cancer among firefighters. My guests are Tom Hanafy, Firefighters Union of Indiana President, Kevin Crawley, Health and Safety Chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're having an important conversation today. It's part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media. We're continuing our community discussion about important health issues. In this case, we're talking about the alarmingly high rates of cancer among firefighters and what can be done about both that problem and how we care for them when they do have cancer. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org as a listener named Kevin has done. And I should say my guests are Tom Hanafy, Firefighters Union of Indiana President, Kevin Crawley, Health and Safety Chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris. So Kevin's email, again, at you can send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. The firefighters talked about how health care is really necessary and regular health checkups can prevent a lot of health issues. How do they feel about health care affordability? How do the firefighters fund their health care? Pressed wood materials don't only give off harmful compounds when they burn, they also leach chemicals into the air at a perceptible rate. How does the firefighting community feel about volatile organic compounds in common use? I'll throw that one to Tom first.
Well, as being the oldest person at the table, I'm confident. I like the old way where we use cottons and natural fibers and woods, especially in furniture and clothing. However, that's not the way of the world today, and we have to deal with what the world we live in today. So you cannot buy natural. I'm sure that what I'm wearing today is full of synthetics, and and that's what people. So how do I feel about it? I like the good old days with the natural fibers. However, the reality is today, and we have to do the things we have to do to avoid it. And learn more about it. The other thing is the science of it. Show or the movie or film about Toxic Hot Seat out of Detroit, where they've documented that how they burn and these chemicals that are put in. I think you have to talk to legislators and talk about how do we make this safe as possible. And this is a national movement that's been discussed and debated. And frankly, it's been some of the chemical industries have been advocates to keep these chemicals in the furniture, and we oppose it, obviously. We want safe living environments for our families just like everybody else.
Are there things, I mean, before we move on from that, are there steps that we're in the middle of another building boom now that, the great slowdown of a decade ago is in memory, are there things that people can do with their homes or, if you're building an office building that can make it safer, not just for the people who work there, but in case of firefighters, the people who might have to run in there when everything's going wrong and, save lives and try to save the structure. Kevin, I'll start with you on that.
I think it's not just for the discussion on cancer, but when we talk building construction and the things that we do, it's just overall firefighter safety. A lot of the things that we see now are, as Tom pointed out, we see a lot of composites and a lot of glues and things like that in building construction, whereas before we saw wood and nails. Mm-hmm. Those structural members fail faster under a fire load. That certainly creates a danger for us. They reach hotter temperatures faster, which also creates a problem for us, which results in a faster burning process. So I would say if you're looking for an answer, we would go back to the old way that we built things, just like the older clothes that we wear, but that's not always popular and easy to do because of the cost.
Hank?
Yeah, I think to kind of dovetail on what Kevin was saying is the engineered lumber with the glue and stuff, it burnt, like he said, it burns hotter, it fails quicker. It brings that fire to a flash over quicker, which is when everything in the room basically ignites, and not survivable by even us with our protective equipment on. So, but I think as things change and as things go on and things change, we have to adapt and change along with it and be able to, I don't know what to say.
Adjust.
Well, I lost. Yeah, adjust with it and move.
Well, I think engineering, when you engineer your home, if you're building a home or buying a home, I think that there's things you can do with your heating and ventilation system to help keep it proper. Because we're building tighter homes now because it costs so much to heat and air, and now we air conditioning. So to save on that, we tighten everything up. That's not always good for our health. Sometimes you have to have the ability to open windows. We just built a new building here in Indianapolis on Massachusetts Avenue for the local firefighters built here. And it was important to us to have windows that operated. And the architect said, oh, no, generally they don't do that anymore. But we're not. So I want those type of things. I want to be able to open up my home, open up my office building. And I think good architects, good engineering can help with that. The other thing I want to mention briefly, this past legislature, we worked with the Builders Association. The building materials are different, and we want larger open spaces. So we have engineered or structural lumber that's manufactured, and it burns differently, and we have to know about that. And so the legislature passed a law that we get notified if these if these buildings are built with these materials, as we're going in, we get notification that that those are that way. So we address the fire a little differently. And it's been it was a great victory in working with the Indiana Builders Association to think through problems for us. And that's how it's communication and dialogue to get through those kind of problems.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the alarmingly high rates of cancer that are cropping up among firefighters. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Gretchen has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Gretchen, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Actually, I was just calling because I wanted to join the conversation and let you know about the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. I'm the Indiana director, and we are here to help support any firefighter that is dealing or has dealt with cancer, and as well as their families.
Well, thank you very much for calling and telling us about that, Gretchen. And Hank is smiling, so I think he's going to make reference to that. Thank you very much for calling, Gretchen.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Yeah, I think we all know Gretchen, and
we may know Gretchen.
Yeah. Maybe. And the past person that she took over is getting ready to retire. He was the past... What was he, the local
coordinator
for the state. The Firefighter Cancer Network is a great tool. We had them come in and talk at our cancer support network. When a firefighter gets cancer, they can reach out to the support network. They have other firefighters who have been diagnosed with similar cancers that they can talk to kind of weed their way through the process. They also will ship out they call it a toolbox, but it's literally a toolbox, and it kind of goes through on what to expect as you go down this road once you get diagnosed. Take somebody with you, with the doctor, questions you need to be asking your doctors, just a whole litany of stuff to kind of support them, and then they also reach out to the families too. So I do want to thank Gretchen for all her work and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Let me follow up on that a little bit, because I'm going to anticipate a question that probably would come from a listener anyway. If there are people listening to this and they're concerned they want to provide some help or some support, how should they go about doing that?
I'm welcome to take calls or emails to the local union office.
Do you have the number?
Yeah, it's 317-262-5161.
Okay, give it to him again a little slower.
Yeah, I'm a fast talker.
Yeah,
I get that every time I talk.
Okay.
It's 317-262-5161. Our office is at 748 Mass Avenue, downtown. Or they can email me, but I get a lot of emails. So they can feel free to email me, and I can get them into the right spot, which is Hank, H-A-N-K, dot Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, at the letter L416.com.
Is there, it sounds like, though, there is no sort of support organization to provide for these these firefighters. Would that be something that would be helpful?
That's what that Firefighter Cancer Support Network is for firefighters.
Okay. Where are they funded, though? How are they funded?
There's a little bit of funding from the international, but they're not. They're voluntary supporting firefighters that can talk about and with their experiences. And they have like toolboxes that they've created. But this is firefighters that created this. And it's all over the country. And
so let me ask, is it a 501c3? Can people make tax-deductible contributions to it?
Now that you say, go ahead.
I'll tell you.
I believe so.
I'll tell you what. Let's let, if you would, Gretchen, if you are still listening, if you would go to our Facebook page and enter the information if it is tax deductible and how people might make contributions there if they wish. And while we're talking about contributions, I would be remiss if I didn't remind our listeners that here at WFYI, we're in the midst of our fall radio membership drive, and we're asking you to contribute to make sure the programs and discussions such as this one stay on the air. You can do that in several ways, two ways primarily. You can go to wfyi.org/give and make your contribution online, or you can call 1-800-233-0020. I would urge you to do so. I would remind everyone, my wife and I have done this already. We support public radio because this is something we all do together. We've gotten an email from a listener named Robert, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Robert writes, "What chemistry is recorded after a fire is controlled? Do you take air samples or test the burned items? Thank you all for your service." Kevin, that sounds like a Kevin question.
Yeah, I can answer that. Quite honestly, we don't have the testing to the degree that I think he's asking there. What we used to do is we used to have a four-gas meter that we would run through the structure, mainly to determine when we could take our air masks off. We still have those monitors available now. Some incident commanders are good about recording those numbers. Some of them aren't. But unless there's something specific when we get those mass exposure reports like paint warehouses, Hank discussed, or something specific like asbestos, we don't really have anything that we track particular chemicals.
We are talking about the alarming incidence of cancer among firefighters today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Maryland has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Maryland, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me, and I'm certainly supportive of all the things that have been said. I greatly appreciate the discussion about the manufactured wood, which has been a concern of mine for many years. I've had a lot of dear friends who have suffered or are suffering cancer. So my question is, the vast majority of runs nowadays that the fire department has is not for fires necessarily, but for EMS runs, emergency medical runs. And so there's an exposure there that I've not heard discussed where you can be exposed to meth or fentanyl or any host of other chemicals. Do you know if that's being addressed?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I see a lot of knowing nods around the table here, so you've hit on something, Maryland. Thank you again for calling. So, Tom, I saw you nodding first. I'm going to go with you first.
Yes, we are trying to deal with it, but we're walking in on these scenes. Obviously, we glove up and we have gear up, but you're not encapsulated. And this fentanyl and these chemicals and the meth labs, the exposures we have from those, and nobody knows what's creating because they don't know what they're building or cooking. So it's a constant battle. But we don't know exactly the cause and effect yet. Maybe Chief Crawley does. The other thing is that the stresses of the fire of the job, the lack of sleep. When you have you're getting 20, 25, 30 runs in a 24-hour shift. Sleep deprivation has an impact on your system. So when you have these exposures, you're even more susceptible to them. And when you're overheated, for example, in a fire, when your body temperature goes up, you absorb these things even quicker. So there's all these other dynamics that Chief Crawley, I think, could talk about. But obviously, when they're creating these drugs, these synthetic drugs, it's a great concern of ours. Chief?
You know, whether it's going into a fire or whether it's responding to an EMS call, we don't know what we're getting into until we get there. You know, we stand up and we serve. That's what we signed up to do. And we go in there and we mitigate that to the best of our ability. And sometimes we don't find out those details until after the fact. We have exposure control programs. Our firefighters use universal precautions when we deal with emergency medical services calls. We obviously use our PPE when we're at fire incidents. And then if we do have exposures, we talked about the fire and smoke exposures, but on the to the caller, those emergency medical calls, when we do unfortunately have those types of exposures as well, we have a process in place to respond to and take care of those firefighters as well.
We had a question from a listener on Facebook who wanted to know about how fire investigators are protected.
I'll go ahead with that. Okay. Since I used to be a part of the fire investigation team in Indianapolis. The fire investigators have what we're finding with them is they typically have a higher incidence of cancer even above what the firefighters have. And that's because they come in after the fact and do their investigation, and they're tearing the stuff apart to look for the cause. You
so
know,
they're releasing even more.
And what was the common practice up until recently, right, within the past few years, is once those guys get there, they don't have a mask. They don't have protective clothing. The old way that it was done when I first started was you threw on your rubber boots and you went in and you looked around, took your pictures, had guys shovel stuff out. What we have to do is we have to increase their protection as well. And sometimes because they're a smaller population from within even the firefighters, they tend to be overlooked, and we have to address their safety as well. And a different thing than turnout gear because of evidence collection and things like that. We need to work on getting them coveralls. They have half-face respirators right now. And then we have to also, just like the firefighters, we have to change that culture and get them to use it.
You say you did this work. Does it concern you personally in those old days? I mean, is this something you worry about?
I've done a lot of things. So there's a lot of things that concern me, from the military to the fire service and everything in between. But I try not to let it slow me down. I certainly get a physical every year like everybody else and keep my fingers crossed and hope for the best.
Well, that, I think, is an appropriate last note for us to end on. I'd like to thank my guests, Tom Hanafy. He is Firefighters Union of Indiana President, Kevin Crawley, Health and Safety Chief with Indianapolis Fire Department, and Indianapolis Firefighters Union President Hank Harris, for what has been an informative conversation about an important subject. I would remind our listeners that if you value conversations like this, please give to WFYI. You can do so by going to WFYI.org/give or calling 1-800-233-0020. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.